from Foley on Twitter. You're dead wrong. Art should have gone next. Riggo was a one-time Pro Bowler and had a very short run of greatness. Art's was much longer lasting. That's fine. Art had great years. Riggo, by the way, had great years in which he was not named to the Pro Bowl. Again, 70s and 80s football, it was about running backs, okay? And there were so many, many in the NFC, starting with guys like Walter Payton and Tony Dorsett. You know, in the AFC, you had Franco, you had OJ, you had Earl Campbell. I mean, it was the era of running backs. Riggo was considered also to be more of a fullback at times than a halfback or a tailback. But Riggo's one of the great clutch performers in the history of the game and certainly in the history of our franchise. Art's jersey 100% should be retired. I just think Riggo's should go in before his. That's all. Cody Benjamin is with us. Cody does a great job for CBSSports.com. He's always one of my favorites to have on because he is very much an astute and thoughtful NFL reporter and analyst. And he put together a list of the best coaches in the NFL, 1 through 32 with three tiers. But actually, I'm just curious because you're such an NFL guy and to a certain degree a bit of an NFL historian. I don't know how closely you follow these things, and maybe sometimes from afar the perspective is interesting. They just started, Cody, in this franchise a few years ago, retiring jerseys. For many years, it was just Sammy Baugh's 33 that was retired and a bunch of protected jerseys. Well, now they've retired Darryl Green's jersey, Sonny Jurgensen's, Bobby Mitchell's, and Sean Taylor's jersey. And what's left is really a choice between Art Monk, Riggins, and Charlie Taylor, who was a great receiver in the 60s and 70s. Do you have any opinion on who should go next?
Well, thanks for having me back on first. Well, obviously, the minute they announce Art Monk, I mean, you're going to get the wellspring of support for, you know, people feeling like he was overdue and he's been overlooked, you know, long enough from the national perspective. I mean, when you're coming from it locally, I mean, you might have that different perspective. And I heard a little bit of the tail end of your argument, you know, before you brought me on. And I think it makes sense where you're also looking at what era these guys came from and the impact that they had when they played. And so, I mean, to be honest, I think with the whole retiring numbers thing in general, I know others have raised this point as well. You know, you reach a point where, and some franchises are already dealing with this, once you start retiring every hero from every era, you don't have any more numbers left to retire. And so you end up unretiring them. And so really, you know, what matters is, yeah, were they respected for what they did and the importance that they held at that time? I mean, I don't know if I have a strong, I wish I could jump on. I mean, I think you made a valid point that maybe one deserves to go in over the other, you know, in terms of Riggins over Monk. I think that right now, just because Art Monk was named, now you're getting that understandable kind of eruption of support. Oh, yeah, like this should have happened a long time ago for Art Monk, and you can't really take that away from him.
No, and it's two things. One, you know, you talked about sort of Art Monk being overlooked. It took him, what, 13 years post-retirement to get into the Hall of Fame, and I think Peter King had a lot to do with that. Peter King was very much a believer that Art Monk was just a, you know, possession type of receiver, and Gary Clark was the, you know, the threat offensively that defensive coordinators had to prepare for, and I understand that, but Monk was much more than a possession receiver, and all of us felt like it was way overdue by the time he finally got into it. Riggo was retired for like six seasons before he got in. I mean, he wasn't a first ballot, but he was, I think, the second year of eligibility in the Hall of Fame because I think that's the way NFL people viewed him. But your other point is a good one. I'm going to do this today, and then I'm going to enjoy the fact that Art Monk's jersey is being retired because he's one of the all-time great Redskins, and he was an incredible player and a big part of the three Super Bowl wins, even though, ironically, he missed the postseason. season for their first Super Bowl trip when they beat Miami in Super Bowl 17. He got injured at the end of the regular season, and they did not have him in that postseason. But, you know, a part of a great receiver trio with Gary Clark and Ricky Sanders in the, you know, the 87 season, the 91 Skins, which I think is up there, if not at the top of the list of the greatest Super Bowl teams of all time. But anyway, we'll move on. You know, I was calling you to do the coach list that you put together, but you just put something out after that about why some NFL execs vote Lamar Jackson outside of the top five quarterbacks. So why do they?
Yeah, and we're just going off of, you know, the ESPN released
That's right.
their poll.
We talked,
you know,
a little bit about
scouts.
It.
Yep, and so you take that for what it's worth. But, I mean, when you do attach the name, you know, the source as being NFL scouts, coaches, executives, you open your eyes a little bit more.
Yeah.
And Lamar was still ranked, he was fourth on the list. So there's not really, you can't really push back that much. But the fact, I think some people, they did a double take at the fact that some people thought he was number six. I think that was the lowest he went. And some people were wondering, why is that? I mean, Lamar Jackson's a repeat MVP. Sometimes he carries the Ravens. And yeah, we just unpacked. It really is just pretty simple, and it comes down to playoffs. I mean, it comes down to meaningful football games, the postseason. And when you look at the top 10 quarterbacks, at least according to that poll, and we broke it down in the story, just looking at how, you know, what is these quarterbacks' playoff record. And not only record, because we know it is a team sport. It's not just the quarterback, but how are those quarterbacks performing in those playoff games? And Lamar Jackson, look, I mean, I like Lamar Jackson. I think he's a transcendent talent. I think he is one of the three, four best quarterbacks in the NFL. But the numbers also suggest that he turns the ball over at a reasonably higher rate than all those other quarterbacks in the playoffs, at least up until this point. Patrick Mahomes is the only other quarterback with more career playoff turnovers, and he's been in a lot more playoff games than Lamar Jackson. And so I think it's really just he's got to answer that. He's got to, you know, even with Josh Allen, that's a guy who hasn't gotten over the Patrick Mahomes hurdle in the playoffs, but his performances individually, collectively in the postseason, have just been a step above Lamar Jackson. He's also been to an additional conference championship game. And so, yeah, I think Lamar Jackson, the one thing he has to answer yet in terms of skeptics of his game is, look, come through when it matters most. And that's what we're looking for there.
Yeah, I mean, I love what you did, because I've been doing it just sort of back of the envelope, talking about the difference between Josh Allen and Joe Burrow in particular, because I don't think anybody has an issue with Mahomes being ahead of Jackson, okay? And by the way, you mentioned, and you put this together, 17-4 as a playoff quarterback in seven conference title games in a row, a 105.4 QB rating, 53 total touchdowns and 13 turnovers. Lamar's 3-5 in eight playoff games, made it to one conference title game. They lost to Mahomes at home 2 years ago, an 84.6 QBR, 13 touchdowns, 11 turnovers. And those 11 turnovers have been crucial in some of those losses. And you know, Cody, Lamar admitted last year that he gets tight in these playoff games, and he understands the significance of getting through. But to your work that you did here, you know, really putting the actual numbers to a gut feel and sort of back of the envelope, just looking at Pro Football Reference real quickly, Josh Allen and Joe Burrow have just been much more outstanding. They've been outstanding quarterbacks in their playoff games, including their playoff losses to Kansas City, where Lamar hasn't. That's why he's lower than them.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean that, you know, it's time to dump Lamar Jackson.
Right.
Like, I mean, it doesn't mean it's, you know, we've seen this. Like, we have to have patience sometimes. You have a transcendent talent like that. You hope that eventually it's a matter of when, not if, that kind of gets broken through. But I think, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, the numbers bear it out. It's just a different story in the playoffs. I think the other thing that jumped out to me in that comparison, it was an accidental revelation, was the Jalen Hurts conversation, because we look at Lamar Jackson. I think that, you know, and you can fall on different sides of this, but I think no one would disagree that, like, if you're ranking elite quarterbacks in the NFL, I mean, everyone's their hand is shooting up for Lamar Jackson, because he puts prolific numbers out. He looks cool while he's doing it. But you know, they would always take him ahead of Jalen Hurts. But when you look at the numbers in terms of games that matter, and performance in games that matter, I mean, you talk about 11 total turnovers for Lamar Jackson in 8 playoff games. Jalen Hurts has 4 total turnovers in the playoffs for his career. That includes 2 Super Bowl appearances in which he gave 2 championship level performances. Yeah. And so I get it. Would you rather, if you're starting a team, would you rather take the physical gifts of Lamar Jackson? Probably. Would you bet that over the course of time, that's going to bear out better for you? Probably. But at some point you also have to look at the results. And I was stunned actually that, wow, the ESPN poll there had Jalen Hurts 9th. And when you look at the numbers that he's giving you in games that matter most, it's almost unbelievable that he's at that spot.
Yeah, you and I are on the same page. Look, I would not take Jalen Hurts in front of Lamar Jackson, but I point out all the time when it comes to Jalen Hurts, he has risen to the level of the game every single opportunity he has. And you quantified it in this story. Jalen Hurts in 9 playoff games as a starter is 6-3 with a 95.4 QBR, 20 total touchdowns and 4 turnovers. Lamar, 13 touchdowns, 11 turnovers with a 3-5 record. Jalen has really stepped up, but that's one of those where the eye test would say Lamar is a breathless, electrifying, incredible regular season quarterback, and I'll still take him. What did you make of those? Because the controversies were Lamar at 4, you know, behind Burrow, and even Allen in some cases. Hurts at 9, you mentioned that. What about Jaden being at 5? Did you have an issue with that?
Not really, but that's just, that's such a small sample size, but I think we talked before when we put out either quarterback rankings or quarterback tiers. You know, I think Jaden Daniels is already, and we did this with C.J. Stroud too, and we saw that he kind of took a step back once the situation around him got a little less stable. But I'm just of the belief that, you know, with Jaden Daniels, you got not only the numbers, not only the eye test, was passed with flying colors, but he also showed it wasn't just regular season. I mean, we saw, you know, he had the Commanders on the doorstep of a Super Bowl with a roster that, you know, frankly, probably didn't deserve to be there. And so I think that his impact in terms of elevating everything around him, and then just as a rookie, you know, year one, looking unbothered when the lights are brightest, I think that just spoke a lot to me. So I really don't have that much of an issue. Now, these rankings are supposed to reflect, you know, that they should adjust depending on what happens. And so if this year we see, look, Jaden Daniels can't protect himself, he can't protect the ball as well, well, then the ranking should reflect a drop in that. But right now, with what we have, I mean, I would, you know, if you were redrafting all 32 quarterbacks right now, I don't see how Jaden Daniels isn't going in the top 5, if not, you know, 6 is probably the latest I would see him going.
I don't know if you felt this way. The first thing that struck me about the list when I saw it yesterday, and seeing Baker Mayfield at 10 as an example, and seeing Stroud and Love as the only 2 honorable mentions, the depth, or at least at least what we believe to be the depth, because there are a lot of young quarterbacks, right? 6 quarterbacks were taken in the top 12 in 2024, and they're all going to start this year. So we could have a much deeper quarterback group, when we have this conversation in a year or two. But I think in terms of quarterback depth league-wide, it's the lowest it's been in a long time. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, I think it's always tricky just because you're always dealing with, I mean, that's why we've done quarterback tiers too, where, look, it's fun to do the rankings 1 through 32, but sometimes it's more helpful to break them up into tiers. I think that there's a select group, you know, I'd say five or six, where no question about it, every team would love to have this guy under center. And, you know, that's your Mahomes, your Burrow, your Allen, your Jackson. And that's where, you know, you would have some debate about a guy like Jalen Hurts. But then there's your borderline stars, your guys who, if you give them the supporting cast, you know they can take you far. You're not sure about a championship, but they can take you far. I'm thinking of, you know, a Jared Goff, a Brock Purdy, guys who've been on these big stages, but in part thanks to the stuff around them.
Right.
Then you've got this massive, I mean, huge contingent of quarterbacks where I think they're all basically interchangeable. They may play different styles. Their offenses may cater to different things. You know, one of them, like Dak Prescott, may prefer to be more of a pure pocket passer. You know, with Bo Nix, maybe you're rolling out a little bit more. I think that there's such a big gray area. So in terms of depth, I think everyone except for maybe the Saints, the Colts, you know, everyone's got a reasonable quarterback. The problem is you've only got six or seven that are like true difference makers. And that's been the case for a while.
That's true. I mean, in terms of like that true elite level, even though I think right now, and I think this story on ESPN it expressed this and described it as such, that there was a big, you know, sort of drop off after the top four, which means Jaden probably got the most top, you know, number five votes, but didn't get many one, two, three, or four votes, if any. But yeah, I think we've seen for a while, it's like the list is usually four, five, six, seven that you would consider to be truly elite, and then there's that group 8 to 15 where they're kind of interchangeable. We're talking to Cody Benjamin. Cody writes for CBSSports.com. You can follow him on X at Cody J. Benjamin. He writes a lot, which is great. There's always a good story that he puts out. And he had the other day the list of coaches 1 through 32. He put them into three tiers. And let me just mention that, you know, coaches 21 through 32 were a tier three, unproven and underwhelming. We don't have to talk a lot about those guys. Those guys include new guys like Brian Schottenheimer and Ben Johnson and existing guys like Dable, you know, and Raheem Morris. So let's get to essentially what turned out to be your top 20 coaches. We'll move towards Dan Quinn here in a moment, but what went in overall to kind of your thought process on the guys that aren't, you know, unproven or underwhelming?
Yeah, I mean, similar to quarterbacks, it's a tricky science here in terms of decoupling the coach from what they're given. I mean, you can't do that fully. It's impossible. I mean, the quarterbacks, again, you've got some that are going to transcend their surroundings, and similar to coaches, there are some coaches that have just proven, I mean, the track record is just so deep that you would just trust that, put them in any organization, and they would probably have that organization looking okay. With the other guys, it's tougher because they're hinging a lot on, well, what do you have at quarterback? You know, what were the expectations when you were hired? And so the top, I mean, it's kind of balancing similar to quarterbacks again, because it's coaches and quarterbacks that really drive the conversation. You're balancing what have you proven, but also what is the upside here? Because in that bottom tier, there were some cases where, and this is maybe nitpicking a little, depending on how you're looking at it, but there were some cases where guys who've already been coaches were ranked lower than guys who've never been coaches solely right. Because I'd prefer to just hire for the upside, because we right. Kind of what I've seen from those other guys isn't necessarily moving the needle enough to say, I'd rather just take the unknown. And so it's a combination of what have you shown with what you've had, and what have you shown to indicate you're worth betting on moving forward.
All right. So let's go with, you know, we'll mention a few of these. We won't give the whole list, but number one's really easy, right? Like there's no one who follows the NFL or writes about the NFL is going to argue with Andy Reid as the number one coach in the NFL. Like how much distance is there between Reid and Sean McVay at two?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's pretty, there's one that just feels right in the whole list, and it is that one. And for a while, you know, it would have been a guy like Belichick, but even Belichick slid toward the end. You know, the one thing that was in my mind putting Andy Reid at one was the Super Bowl and how you know, kind of embarrassed the Chiefs were. But then again, it's like you remind yourself, my goodness, you know, five of the last six Super Bowls. I mean, to even get there and looking at their talent, sometimes the Chiefs are not the most talented team on the field. They aren't. And sometimes or oftentimes they're winning on the margins. And that speaks so much sometimes to they're equipped situationally. And that often falls back on the coach. And so, yeah, it was a pretty easy one there. And to be honest, there's a lot of good coaches up there, but I would say between, you know, after Reed and McVay, there felt like you could have swapped five or six of those guys in that top 10 spot.
I agree with that. You know, the interesting thing about Andy Reid is prior to Patrick Mahomes, there was a real, you know, debate as to what Andy Reid was as a head coach. First of all, he was not great at clock management. You know, some of the strategic moments in big games. You know, the year before Mahomes with Alex Smith at quarterback, they blew a huge lead and lost a wild card game at home, you know, to Marcus Mariota in Tennessee in ugly fashion. But at the same time, I always felt like his teams overall over a 16-game schedule overachieved more often than underachieved, but he was far from being thought of as a lock for the Hall of Fame.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, when we look back at this now, and you know, sometimes it's a silly argument, but you'll still hear occasionally, "Oh, the Eagles should have never let him go back in 2012." No, at that time, you know, it was the right time for Andy Reid and the Eagles to split. I mean, there was a reason that happened. Things had grown stale in Philadelphia, and Andy Reid was a good coach then. He was a good offensive mind, but he has come a long way. I think that the best reason you put Andy Reid at number one is that he's adapted to his personnel. He's adapted to what he has at his disposal. He maximizes whatever he's given. So when Mahomes first came on the scene, this was a big play machine in Kansas City. You had Tyreek Hill who could fly down the field. That was, you know, Mahomes is throwing 50 touchdowns because the Chiefs are just a video game offense. Lately, you know, you don't have the speed, the reliability of someone like Tyreek Hill. You've got banged up wide receivers, an older Travis Kelce. So they become much more of a methodical, you know, late era Patriots kind of a team where we're just going to kind of, you know, beat you around for four quarters and then win on the margins. And so the ability to win with every kind of roster and yeah, you can't unlink him from Mahomes, but you know what? That's, you know, you can't unlink fully Belichick and Brady either. So I think it's, yeah, it's just worked.
Before we'll work our way to Dan Quinn, everybody, I promise, and where Cody has Dan Quinn ranked among the 32 coaches in the NFL. But I'm curious as to what the biggest pushback to this list has been.
I'll tell you what, I mean, with these kind of lists, you always make somebody upset. There has been there's been surprisingly little animosity coming back from this list. I would say the most consistent pushback has probably been Kyle Shanahan dropping too far. Now, I think, you know, he's down at seven in this one. And I think after Reed and McVay, I think you could make the case that five or six guys in the top 10 could be shuffled around. I mean, I had a hard time placing Nick Sirianni.
Right.
That's a guy who, he was in the middle of the list last year because I didn't know what to do with him. Nobody knew what to do with him, including the Eagles, who contemplated, you know,
right,
maybe do we make a change here? But again, it's similar to the Jalen Hurts thing. It's like, well, would you rather have Dan Campbell than Nick Sirianni? Would you rather have Jim Harbaugh? I think a lot of people would say yes. But then when you come down and look at what they've done, you know, when it matters, coaching in two of the three last Super Bowls, turning that team that was horrific at the end of 23 and somehow behind the scenes gelling that group, that was a hard one to place. But I think that the most pushback is probably from 49ers fans who feel that, look, injuries have wrecked Kyle Shanahan's teams, and that is true, but it's very boom or bust with Shanahan's 49ers.
Right. Yeah, I thought you would say Sirianni. You've got Sirianni at four behind Reed, McVay, John Harbaugh, and then Sirianni. It's just so interesting. Look, they love him there. There's something that he's clearly successful as a motivator. But, God, there have been some buffoonish moments with him, including early in the season last year, where you were wondering, will he even survive their bye week? I mean, that's what's crazy about the league, right? I mean, he almost didn't make it back for 2024. And early in the season, when he's jawing with Browns fans after they barely beat Cleveland, with Eagles fans who were complaining, I thought that would be the area in which you got the most pushback, Sirianni.
Yeah, I think that Eagles fans, and they're a volatile bunch. And so, you know, when it's working, they're fully behind you. When it's not, they want you out of town. I think that is kind of what's happening with Sirianni here, where they were rightfully, you know, questioning his place on the sidelines. But now that kind of, you know, the stink of 2023 is totally washed away, I think that Eagles fans have actually been like, oh, finally he's getting some recognition here. So it's kind of almost a bandwagon amongst Eagles fans even. But yeah, I agree. Right. I mean, I think a year ago at this time, even like you said, September, October, 24. I mean, after that Browns game, I remember I was covering a Vikings game, but I remember driving home listening to that press conference that he gave after the Browns game. He had shaven his head, brought his kids to the press conference after screaming at the fans. I said to myself aloud, this is going to be the moment we look back and say, this is where it just totally blew up. This is where it went, you know, totally downhill. This was when we knew it would be over for Sirianni. And I was wrong, totally wrong. I mean, somehow behind the scenes, those guys championed him. And he found a way, you know, you thought at one point he and Jalen Hurts didn't see eye to eye, didn't like each other.
Right.
They're holding the trophy at the end of the year. And so, it's confounding. I didn't know where to put him. The results kind of made me put him there.
All right, we are talking to Cody Benjamin from CBSSports.com. He put out yesterday a ranking of the coaches in the NFL. Before we get to Quinn, here's the one that I was most impressed with, and then I had two gripes. I was impressed that you had Kevin Stefanski at 13. I think he's a very underrated coach who will coach arguably the worst team in the NFL this year with the craziest of quarterback situations. But I actually think he's an outstanding coach. And I can't imagine that you could have gone any higher than 13. But when you consider he's the coach of probably the worst team in the league and having him at 13, I'm aligned with you. What do you like about Stefanski?
Yeah, I think it's just making the most of a bad situation. And I know he's not completely blameless for, you know, the quarterback decisions that, you know, he had to be at least somewhat on board with the Deshaun Watson gamble. But at some point, the cards that you're dealt there, I did feel a little bad, you know, putting him that even that high, because I could see where he's not coaching a good team. But the fact that you drag a team with Joe Flacco and Kareem Hunt as your top, you know, playmakers 1 year to the playoffs, I just imagined, you know, if Kevin Stefanski were let go by the Browns, or they had an abrupt mutual parting of ways, I think there'd be a lineup of teams that would be very interested in speaking with him and hiring him. And so, that was kind of the draw there. I think, like, I was even surprised at the record he has, because Cleveland has been so bad and perpetually rebuilding. It was astounding that the record was even that reasonable.
Right. Well, they had that run with Flacco at the end of the season 2 years ago. I think the number one gripe for me, I kind of am with 49er fans. I think Kyle's probably a little bit higher. But you had Todd Bowles at 19th. I think he is always incredibly overlooked and criminally underrated as one of the great defensive minds in football and a guy who's done a hell of a job the last few years after Brady left.
I think that you know, if I could be honest, I think maybe there is some lingering, you know, when they made the switch from Bruce Arians to Todd Bowles, I think that maybe there was, you know, everyone kind of anticipated a potential drop off and kind of the wizardry of the first, you know, years with Tom Brady there. It kind of felt like when Todd Bowles took over, you know, fair or not, he kind of that's a high bar to clear there. You know,
right.
When Brady arrived, winning the Super Bowl right away with Bruce Arians there in Tampa Bay, I think it probably unfairly set the standard. And I do think we overlook nationally, you know, we talk about the NFC South like it's wide open all the time. But the Bucs have, you know, they are repeat, you know, champions there in the NFC South. And so I will say, yeah, defensively, things fell off a bit last year. I think another thing that he deserves credit for, though, is the offensive staffing because, at least lately, you know, finding the guys, you know, you had Dave Canales.
Then you got
Liam Cohen.
Yeah.
And so I think you trust probably who he's hired here to keep Baker Mayfield going.
All right. We saved the best for last. So tell everybody where you have Quinn on this list and why.
Yeah. So Dan Quinn is 14th. And so I think, you know, he's certainly not Nick Sirianni in terms of there's a lot of reasons he's not Nick Sirianni, but I compare him just a little bit because of the positioning. So last year, really didn't know where to put Nick Sirianni. He was at 15. And kind of that middle ground is where you've got guys who, well, they've shown enough that they warrant, they're not at the bottom, but there's still something that's maybe holding you back from saying, I would no doubt hire him. I believe he's an elite coach. I think that with Dan Quinn, you're just trying to figure out how much of 2024's magic was solely Jaden Daniels. And he was responsible for, you know, Cliff Kingsbury making that work. He's part of the group that brought in Jaden Daniels. I think he also deserves some credit for giving Jaden Daniels enough, you know, veteran support in the roster. The question is really just like, you look at the track record. I know that his Atlanta tenure is, you know, that's a different time, but, you know, 4 of the 6 seasons he was the Falcons coach, he did not have a winning record with the Falcons. And so I think you're just trying to figure out, is this for real? Can he now take that franchise to the next level, which would mean a Super Bowl, really. And he's been on that stage before. I think the question is just, it's just trying to figure out who is responsible for this Commanders turnaround. Is it Adam Peters? Is it Jaden Daniels? I think Dan Quinn's part of it. We just need a little more time to say he is an elite ingredient in that recipe.
Number 14 on Cody Benjamin's top coaches ranked 1 through 32 list put out on CBSSports.com. We could probably do 10 minutes on Mike Tomlin's ranking as well, but we don't have time. As always, I really enjoyed it and appreciate it. Hope you're well. Let's do it again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks again for having me back on.
At Cody J. Benjamin on X on Twitter. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.